And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. I'm talking about this show runs down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville. We got to Tuscaloosa, over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi all thrown in just for good measure. Text lines are open. You're welcome to it. 833-68-RIGHT.
They're booming.
They are booming, Boomer.
They're booming.
Boomer, they're booming.
And did you see the text from Hank? He's from Franklin, Tennessee, right where I was
from. I did see that. I just answered him back a minute ago. I mean, that's I told you we're a multi-state show.
I love it.
So, yeah, Hank from Franklin, Tennessee texted in and says he also used to be on Young Life staff, which is cool.
That's cool.
Because I was, too. I used to be on Young Life staff, Young Life Ministries, for 7 years. Hank, glad you're in the audience. Thanks very much for the text. If you want to text in, 833-687-4448, 833-68-RIGHT, that's the number. I'm going to go ahead and move into Supreme Court stuff first. I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to do Supreme Court stuff first, because as we speak, I think right this very minute, Alabama is in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. Pray tell, Phil, why are we there? Well, I'm going to tell you. But this is going to be a term that could have a number of decisions that could have massive impacts upon day-to-day life, upon voting, upon things that you and I thought were already done, but they're still going. So let me just break it down for you a little bit. So story off the hill.com, dated yesterday. When the Supreme Court starts its new term on Monday, which was yesterday, the six Republican-appointed judges are expected to resume the project they began last term of remaking U.S. constitutional law in a conservative image. Yes, this article is written from a liberal slant. They want you to believe they're trying to remake constitutional law in a conservative image. No, they're trying to be jurists who strictly construe the Constitution and interpret the law, not make the law. That's what they do. All right, so... Anyway, all that to say, it says, with many Americans still reckoning with a term that eliminated the federal abortion right in the Dobbs decision, expanded Second Amendment and religious rights, and shrank the U.S. government's power to curb climate change, I told you they're freaking out, the 6-3 conservative majority has chosen a set of highly combustible cases that court watchers believe are likely to break along ideological lines. One person asked for commentary was a guy named Irv Gornstein, who is the executive director of Georgetown Law's Supreme Court Institute. He said, yeah, we saw a number of 6-3 decisions, and there's no reason to think this coming term or any term in the foreseeable future will be any different on things that matter most. Get ready for a lot of 6-3s. Okay, we'll see. I mean, John Roberts tends to wind up disappointing conservatives quite often, even though that can result in a 5-4, which we're still okay with. But here's the five cases that are before the court right now. And one of them is an Alabama case that's being argued today. First of all, there's a case on the environment, Supreme Court case Sackett versus the EPA. This one's going to decide whether or not, and this sounds mundane, like, oh, it's not a big deal. It's a big deal. These people, the Sacketts, apparently have not been able to build their house on their own land because something about the lake that they were wanting to build it next to could in some way... touch underground tributaries that then get back to federally protected waters. Really? Yeah. So the Supreme Court's first case of the new term involves a major environmental dispute over the federal government's power to protect the nation's waterways under the Clean Water Act. The central question is whether the EPA's regulatory reach extends to wetlands that are not connected to federal waters above ground. I mean, for the love. Everything winds up being connected somewhere underground, it seems like. So how are they going to continue to manage this? Anyway, the bottom line is that case is up now. The next one, affirmative action. This one is so irritating. Because you look at this and go, all right, we all know that affirmative action is being distorted and is being, you know, dragged into places where it was never intended to go. And affirmative action was never going to wind up being successful in the first place because all it is reverse racism. But affirmative action cases, there's two of them, one against Harvard and one against the University of North Carolina that have both been brought by the same plaintiffs group, and so they are both being argued together, I believe. It says a pair of cases will challenge the use of race-conscious admissions in higher education. Harvard, it is said, is being challenged by a group of Asian American students because they claim that Harvard violated their civil rights by engaging in what they call racial balancing and refusing to administer a racial neutral approach to admission. In other words, Asian students were being discriminated against. They couldn't get in. And then the other one is University of North Carolina, which will be argued along similar arguments, similar points. So, yeah, that's happening. The next one, election law, North Carolina again. In this one, you remember all that stuff back in the 2020 election cycle about how people were saying, yeah, but how did the Secretary of State change the law by himself? How did things happen? How did the governor change the law by himself or herself? How did the city councils change the way elections run? Because the U.S. Constitution says that only the state legislatures can control the manner and means by which elections are carried out in their states. Well, the lawsuit that will tell us what the Supreme Court thinks about that is before the court now. The justice, it says, will hear an election law case that could hand state legislatures sweeping new powers. They're not new. All it's going to do is affirm, we believe, affirm that legislatures were the only ones that can make decisions like, I don't know, if it's scary and it's COVID, you can't just do mail-in and you can't put out boxes on every corner unguarded and you can't count ballots for 2 months. Only the legislature can make you do that. Well, it's called the Independent State Legislature Doctrine. Some would call it the 10th Amendment. I would call it also the U.S. Constitution, but we'll see. They're going to talk about it. One more, and then I'll get to Alabama. LGBTQ discrimination. Haven't we been here before? The Supreme Court now going to hear a First Amendment dispute that deals with a Colorado website designer's refusal to make her services available for same-sex weddings. Okay. Isn't Colorado where the cake baker came from? Who said that it violated his conscience to bake a cake for a gay wedding? And now we have a website designer that just simply said, I'm sorry, I would prefer not to be your website designer. Well, that's an affront because there's no other website designer that we can go to in the whole world. We have to use you, and you've discriminated. No, I've made a conscience decision, a decision of my conscience. It's my faith. Well, the Supreme Court's going to hear as to whether or not that in some way her religious beliefs are violations of Colorado's new non-discrimination law in the wake of the cake baker suit. That's amazing. And then, folks, there's Alabama. Because Alabama has got to be front and center when stuff's happening. Here we are, voting rights. Alabama again, voting rights? Yep. The justices are going to weigh, and they're actually hearing it in oral arguments today. The justices will weigh a voting rights case that tests the legal limits on alleged gerrymandering, which involves the drawing of voting maps in a manner that allegedly dilutes the electoral power of racial minorities. Here's the bottom line, and I'll expand on it more in a few minutes. The plaintiffs in a case against Alabama's new voting maps on congressional districts believe that in some way, despite the fact that the districts are almost exactly the same since 1992, that in some way, because there are 27% of the state's population is black, that means that they need to have 27% of the congressional seats to be black. It's a total assumption on their part, in my opinion, that if we redrew the lines, that black people will only vote for black people. That's what they're saying. I don't feel that way. I mean, me personally, if I lived in, where is Tim Scott, South Carolina, I would vote for Tim Scott in a heartbeat. That guy's a great senator. Oh, by the way, he's black. And I can see that around, you know, I can name you any number of people who are deserving of the right to be in public office who would have my vote if I were in their area. But the plaintiffs in this case in Alabama, which is named Merrill, as in Secretary John Merrill, Merrill versus Milligan. Merrill versus Milligan being heard today will determine whether or not the lines were incorrectly drawn this time, not the last two times, but this time, by not allowing for black demographics to have a majority option in two separate congressional districts. Well, I think you have to first of all consider where people live is not what's looked at when they draw the lines. They look at numbers of people. Well, no, you packed them. They like to say, you packed them. Okay, well, if we unpack them, does that make it better? So what's happening here is we're being asked, we're being told that what we should have done was drawn the maps based on racial lines, but yet the law says we can't draw the lines based on racial lines. So they're arguing, you should have drawn it on racial lines, but we're saying we can't draw it on racial lines. If we did that, then you'd be mad again. All right, we'll see. Supreme Court's going to hear it today. All this stuff is happening, y'all. Maybe I'm lawyer geeking right now. I don't know. But all this stuff is happening right now. These are cases that literally, I mean, the Supreme Court, one story I've got here from Breitbart, the Supreme Court only hears roughly 80 cases a year. And the ones I decided for you, plus the ones they've already done this year, have been on an epic scale. And folks, I'm just telling you, we may see some decisions come down, one of which is an Alabama-based decision with Secretary of State John Merrill's name attached to it. And we'll find out. We'll find out. Where do we stand? And how's life going to be after this? And will places like Harvard have to do away with their blatant racial discrimination against Asians? And will Alabama be told that we're okay? You can't draw a black-only congressional district. We recognize that. We hope so. Or what about, you know, maybe a website designer? I'm sorry, Mrs. Website Designer. You have to violate your conscience and do things for people that you don't like or don't believe in or that violate your faith. All these things are right now before the Supreme Court. It's going to be interesting to watch. Boomer, tell you what, man, take us to a break. We'll come right back. It is Supreme Watch, number one on the Triple Dipper. I cannot convey to you enough as an attorney how much I recognize that this term is going to be an amazing one. This is like watching a Rocky movie for lawyers. All right, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Jumping back into number one of the Triple Dipper, Supreme Court Watch, that's what I'm calling it. And like I said, I'm kind of geeking on legals here. The lawyer in me looks at this stuff and goes, wow. So but I can't convey more how wow this is, because what we're looking at right now is a Supreme Court term that, when you add it to the last Supreme Court term that did things like do away with, you know, the right to abortion, the so-called right to abortion, or for that matter, expanded Second Amendment rights in New York, therefore the nation. This one also moves towards making some decisions that could have epic impact upon day to day. All right, so let me jump into that Alabama case just for a minute in more detail. Story here on Fox News. Because, yes, it's national news what came out of Alabama October 4th, that is today. The Supreme Court on Tuesday will debate whether the state of Alabama's congressional map illegally disadvantages black voters. Following the 2020 census, Alabama created a new redistricting map for its 7 seats in the U.S. House of Representatives, and a group of Alabama voters, the NAACP and Greater Birmingham Ministries, filed a lawsuit claiming the new maps limited the influence of black voters by placing people from, quote, majority black counties into majority white congressional districts in low enough numbers that black voters have no electoral influence. Okay, they argue the map should be redrawn so that Alabama now would then have 2 majority black districts instead of just 1, Congressional District 7. Representative Terry Sewell is the only Democrat elected to the U.S. delegation. Really, she's one of the only major office holders who's a Democrat in the entire state of Alabama right now. But the truth be told, she comes from a district that's going to wind up being more Democrat-leaning in general unless they see a wave of political change. The allegation being made here by the plaintiffs in this case, though, is that it's because she's black, not because she's Democrat. the allegation is being made that if we would just let the black population be divided, and here's the risk they run, y'all. To me, we're seeing more and more Latino and black voters are getting fed up with being taken advantage of by the Democrat Party. They're fed up with being told, well, because you're black, you will vote Democrat. Remember when Joe Biden said that? Man, if you ain't voting for me, you ain't black. How does he get away with that? Well, the truth be told, that's a lie. That's an assumption. That's an insult. That basically, because of the color of your skin, that determines how you're going to vote. All right, well, by and large, the black population tends to vote more Democrat. I think that's beginning to fade away. Not entirely, but it's certainly fading away. The risk these plaintiffs run is, what if they win? What if they win and the districts are redrawn? What if that means they just diluted their only strong Democrat congressional district and spread some of that into another district, which might make it a little weaker for the Republicans, but not enough to where a Republican wouldn't get elected maybe in both places? Phil, you can't say that. Black people only vote Democrat. No, that's what they believe. Well, the state, in this article from Fox News, it says Alabama is set to argue in the case today, and they probably already are, that Alabama's redistricting plan followed existing district lines and attempted to make what they call race-neutral adjustments for small shifts in population over the last decade, but otherwise retain the existing district lines, and they largely did. But the issue before the court is whether Alabama violated Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act, which prohibits voting practices or procedures that discriminate on the basis of race. The decision could help bring long-awaited clarity to how the courts will interpret Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act from now on going forward. States everywhere are looking at this, because what's happened is we have a reverse claim. In the past, the claims have been you suppressed black voters. The claim being now made is you should have done more to accentuate black voters. Well, that's odd. So what you're saying is, oh, I should have been more conscious of race when we drew the lines. I say I, the people who drew the lines. Republicans should have been more conscious of race when they drew the lines. Instead, they were trying to be race neutral, which is what the law says. And here we are in court. The interesting thing is, and here's the dynamic, and I'll stay it right up front. The interesting dynamic is they did send this thing up before a three-judge panel. Keep in mind that we're at the Supreme Court now, which means that we're on appeal from something. We're on appeal from a loss. I'll be honest with you, we are. And it went up before a three-judge panel at the 11th Circuit. The 11th Circuit three-judge panel ruled in favor of the plaintiffs and shocked everybody. And, oh, by the way, gave the state just 2 weeks to draw new maps. And there was an election pending. The primaries were pending right then. And everybody's like, hang on, we can't draw maps in 2 weeks. And oh, by the way, hang on, we got people running for office who may have to just like drop out because they wouldn't live in the district anymore. Well, the Supreme Court did put a stay on that until they hear the final arguments. That's today. So we may come out of this having to draw new congressional lines, or we may find out that the nation as a whole has a greater understanding of how race plays into drawing lines. All right. Lots of stuff happening at the Supreme Court that goes beyond those cases I just cited, but I'm going to get into this when we get back from the break. What's also amazing is the things they're not going to hear and the things that we're not getting from the Supreme Court. It's funny. You think that liberals would recognize that sometimes when things go up to the Supreme Court in a conservative majority, they might change things we don't like. Why don't they ever say anything when the Supreme Court won't even bother taking up the case that conservatives want? I'll tell you about several cases as we wrap up this segment when we get back from the break. The Supreme Court has just turned away and said, no, we're not going to hear that. And conservatives are like, well, crap. All right. I'm telling you, it's a court. It's not a court of public opinion. It's a court of judicial opinion. That's the way it should be. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Hour number two, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios, the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. We cover down on all of the issues, man. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Text line's been busy. Got some folks checking in just saying, hey, love the show and that kind of stuff, and glad of it. You want to text in 833-687-4448. Back on this thing about the Supreme Court. So I will say this. It's like a guessing game as to what the Supreme Court's going to do. And when I say that, I mean literally. I mean, I'm not going to be a bit surprised to find out there's actually bookies out there in Vegas that are laying odds on what a Supreme Court is going to do about any number of decisions. And they look at stuff like, how did they ask the questions? What did they say? What happened? Did they blink their eyes a lot? You know, and when they hear oral arguments, And it depends on the personality of the justice. You've got, apparently, yesterday, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, the newest one sworn in by the Obama administration, she was, like, out there, like, sort of taking the opponents to task on the Clean Water Bill or Clean Water Act issue that's before the court right now. And so everybody's like, hey, she's like being almost combative, but we kind of know where she is. She's a liberal. You can kind of anticipate where she's going to go on this thing. At the same time, you'll have others who are more reserved. And you've got some, Clarence Thomas rarely asks a question at all. He'll just sit there and listen and take notes. So it depends on their personality. You can't tell what's going to happen. Part of the guessing game is literally based upon the nuances of even facial expressions. And how the arguments were made. And did they ask a question? And did they interrupt to ask the question? But then you got stuff that's supposed, I mean, and also I will say this, the decisions are also supposed to be sacrosanct. Like one of the last remaining bastions of sort of, not secret, well, secrecy, yes, but of reserving until the right moment was the Supreme Court of the United States. Until the Dobbs decision. Do you remember what happened 5 months ago this past weekend? Unprecedented in Supreme Court history, a leaked document came out. Somebody got inside the court, took a draft of the opinion that wound up being pretty close to verbatim what the eventual opinion was that did away with abortion right as a right, and leaked it. Story here on FoxNews.com, October 3rd, yesterday. 5 months later, the Supreme Court is still investigating who leaked the abortion case. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. It's not like they've got thousands of employees. It's not like they had to canvass the Pentagon to decide, you know, the Pentagon, in one building, you have 24,000 employees. It's not like they had to, no. They've got a limited number of people who had access to that manuscript, period. That brief was only available to a certain number of clerks who worked for the justices, and there's only a certain number of justices, 9, so you can kind of imagine that it was not like in everybody's hands. I don't think a janitor went in and took it off a computer. So who did it? Well, story on Fox News, Supreme Court is still investigating how a draft opinion overturning Roe v. Wade was leaked and has yet to issue a report or disclose the identity of the leaker. 5 months later to the day, on the first day of the court's new term, that was yesterday, the leaker's identity is still unknown, and over the summer, reports surfaced the court was seeking access to the phone records of law clerks in an effort to learn how the opinion may have leaked out. So they're still going. In the process, though, of wondering what people are going to do, yesterday, the first argument they heard was on that Clean Water Act thing, the question of whether or not underground waters can also be considered controlled as waters of the United States, and the EPA can regulate what you can do above ground because of what's below ground. Well, during oral arguments in that case called Sackett v. EPA, it says at least some of the 6 conservative justices indicated they might be skeptical of the plaintiff's arguments, meaning that there's speculation that, wait, hey, ho, maybe the conservatives are not all in on this thing. And they're already speculating what that could mean for that particular case. But I said before the break, sometimes it's interesting what they don't pick up on. Because, see, the Supreme Court has discretion. They can determine what they will and will not take up. Every case that you file on appeal does not necessarily get taken up. I just spent, by the way, here in Alabama, I just spent the last week finalizing an appellate court brief in a case where I won at trial just about 4 or 5 months ago. 4 months ago? How long has it been? I'm thinking about it now. May. Yeah, thereabouts. I literally won the case at trial. The opposition tried to file a motion to reconsider. That was denied, and then they filed their appeal. And now I have to defend the decision that went in my client's favor. I spent a week putting together a 35-page responsive brief to their appeal. I have never had to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, but I anticipate that it is far more involved. That being said, just because someone appeals doesn't mean they have to take it up. For instance, Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy. Mike Lindell, story on USA Today, dated yesterday. Supreme Court turns back the effort by MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell to toss out a $1.3 billion defamation suit. You may recall Mike Lindell became one of the guys who was leading the charge against claims of electioneering and machines that were in some way biased. The company called U.S. Dominion has filed suit against him for defamation. The Supreme Court on Monday declined to hear an appeal of his as he tries to fend off the defamation suit. Mike Lindell, the founder of MyPillow and a regular presence at Trump rallies, is fighting a $1.3 billion defamation suit filed in federal court by U.S. Dominion, the company that manufactures voting machines used in several battleground states. Doesn't mean that Mike Lindell lost a suit. It just means he's probably going to have to go through the suit now. $1.3 billion. Good Lord, I think I'd appealed that too. So next case I've got that they chose not to take up. Which one do I want here? I'll do this one. Reuters reports as of yesterday. Supreme Court turns away a challenge to the U.S. vaccine rule for health workers. So, you know, conservatives are rooting for Mike Lindell. Conservatives are rooting against vaccine mandates. And we didn't get either one here. U.S. Supreme Court on Monday declined to hear a challenge by Missouri and nine other states, mostly Republican-led, to President Joe Biden's COVID-19 vaccine mandate for workers in healthcare facilities that receive federal funds. So basically, if you're in a healthcare facility and you get Medicaid and Medicare funding, which means virtually every healthcare facility in the world, in the U.S. world, then you've been mandated by the federal government to get the COVID vaccine. And there's a case that went up on appeal, and the justices have now turned it away. When the lower courts had declined to immediately consider the claims, the Supreme Court has decided not to take that up, which means the lower court prevails. The lower courts, the fight was over whether or not the vaccine mandate violates federal administrative laws and yada, yada, and you can imagine. Well, the healthcare worker rule, it's about 10.3 million workers at 76,000 healthcare facilities. It's a big one. We've won almost every single vaccine mandate case. And again, it doesn't mean they've lost the case. It means it now can't be stayed. It has to go forward on the merits. The last one I've got, it's amazing what they don't take up. Here they are looking at things like, you know, the cake baker, not the cake baker, but the internet web designer. And then now they're actually going to hear one, though, that could determine free speech on social media. They are taking this one up. CNN reports as of yesterday. Supreme Court to hear cases that could decide the future of internet speech and social media. This is going to be a big deal, y'all. You heard me talk about Section 230? Section 230, the protections afforded under the law allegedly to protect all these web-based platforms from any lawsuits because they choose to limit your capacity on their platform. Well, the Supreme Court will hear two pivotal cases later this term about online speech that could shape the future of social media, the court announced on Monday. In one case, Gonzalez v. Google, it's set to consider whether tech platforms' recommendation algorithms are protected from lawsuits. Because, why? Because they shield people from having to see conservative opinions. Their algorithms are set up to discriminate against conservatism. The second case, Twitter v. Tamna, will decide whether social media companies can be sued for allegedly aiding and abetting an act of terrorism when the platforms have hosted unrelated user content that generally expresses support for the groups behind the violence. All I'm saying here is Google, Meta, and Twitter are probably in a bit of a freakout mode right now because they may lose Section 230 if the Supreme Court moves forward on that in a way that conservatives want. Woo! That's a lot of stuff, man. Boomer. All right, I'm through lawyer geeking. I'm gonna have to step back. But yeah, folks, this is going to be an epic term, and there's more to come. And even today, the state of Alabama is before the Supreme Court of the United States. All right, enough of that. We'll move to number two in the triple dipper. I'll start ranting about government on government-run energy. That's up next. Boomer, take us to the break, brother. We will do that right now. Come right back and move to number two on the triple dipper. And then at 3:30, bottom of the hour, Bart Fletcher, president of the Petroleum and Convenience Marketers of Alabama, is going to be here to talk about prices at the pump. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back.